Good evening. This is Wednesday night, and this is The Hidden Work. We are working our way through the book called The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. We're on chapter 12 of that book, and this is the second part of our exploration of that chapter. That should orient you to where we're at and to get more deeply involved in it, you'll have to work along with us. And that's the key phrase that we need in any event. So be prepared, put on the proper set of wings for this adventure, and we'll get ourselves started. And we have a big meal ahead of us as well. We have a big meal that will require let's just say that we chew our food properly and allow it to digest. And guess what? It's okay for that to occur. It's okay for that to occur.
So we're going to have to Fletcherize.
Fletcherize?
Yeah. 40 chews.
40 chews. Okay, I guess. Let's see. I didn't know that one. Yeah. But, so... the particular chapter we're working on, which is chapter 12 of The Hidden Work, is called The Octave, or Octaves. And in the email I sent around a couple of days ago, I advised that take a look at the postings that were there that were left by George and by Harry. I've printed those out for myself and for our work if we need them tonight. But I think we have George is with us on the phone, and I think Tianja was actually might have logged on as well. So
yes.
So without further ado, why don't we get ourselves started? And MA, we won't have Ivan tonight, but MA was kind enough to continue her work. I mean, she's been here for the last hour working her way through The Joy of Sacrifice. So MA, do you want to get us started? Just read the header of the chapter that'll help reorient us and get us going again.
That's octaves. Right. Okay, this is chapter 12, octaves. I would say that that's probably page 116 in this book. Prayer absolute is in the form of an objective nine-stepped octave, which includes two intentional retardations introduced by internal activities of the awakened biological machine. The passage from one scale to another is what those steeped in scientific superstition call magic.
Okay. Pardon? Okay. So one of the posts that we usually, that's been carried by Susan for a couple of years now, almost a year and a half, she can't fulfill that tonight because she's just had dental surgery. So she's just asking if there's anybody else that can call in, be on the phone, and take that role.
Dave, I'm happy to help out myself.
Yeah, but let's just see. I want you to focus also, and thank you for that, and I know you can and you have, but I also want, I'm going to rely heavily on you in the next three pages as we go through this, and I want you to be able to concentrate. So if anybody else has the ability to call in, we would appreciate that, and to take the post that Susan has carried, that would be very thankful.
DeAndre says he'll call in.
Okay, good. Thank you, Harry. That's excellent. And what you'll notice that in any invocational space that, and we've said this over and over again, and I'm going to repeat it over and over again because it's worth repeating, that all of us form a particular post within that invocation. All right? Like right now, Molly is sitting across the room, and she's not on the microphone, she's not on the log, yet I am aware of a very particular post that she is fulfilling. It is evident to me. Susan, when she does the juggling of listening, reading the book, and watching the log, fills a intense post. So different people are following and holding different posts. So that's the form that we take here in our work together. So let's get started. What I'm going to do is I'm going to review where we stopped last time. We're not going to go over that same material, but it's because where we're going to we stopped is the beginning of like the next phase of information.
David, I'm online with you.
Okay, thank you, Harry. And I want to experiment even more fully with a concept that I've brought up a number of times called slow reading. We're going to be slow readers on this. And I'm certainly one of the people that needs to be guided through this material. So I'll be the when you look at a group, any kind of group, whether you're on a external expedition, if you're hiking, if you're on a, let's just say you're gathering wood, planting trees, whatever it is, and there's a group of people, you have to always work in mind with the weakest link in that chain of effort. One very safe way to proceed is to realize that most likely you are that weakest link in that chain. And if you consider and understand the fact that you are the weakest link, it'll help fortify the rest of the group. Okay? So I'm playing that particular role this evening. So we're on chapter 12, octave. And where we stopped last time, we're only a page and a half into it, on the very toward the bottom of page 119. And I'm going to begin with the next paragraph after where we stop, and that's called Lines of Tension. You there with
mm-hmm.
me?
Yeah.
Okay. This is, I think, a very telling phrase. And let me babble on for just another minute, if I may. And George and Harry, let me know if this is even marginally correct the way I'm going to describe the concept of the octave energetically. That in there's patterns of energy. There's patterns throughout everything that we do in nature. They're just patterns. You know, and mathematically there are patterns. Anybody who has worked in math at all understands that and is introduced to that rapidly. There are, in physics, there are patterns that we discover. But what we're talking about here is energetic patterns. And so when I was reading some of the material I did the last 10 days or so, it appears that there is an energy pattern. And that the energy pattern is as decreed as any of these other patterns that we're talking about, and it's throughout. And the way that it works is that the energy has a few steps, and that it just continues, those steps continue, and then it hits a point, and there's a degradation in that energy. It's as if the energy is going like this, I'm indicating a straight line, and then the degradation, in a sense, points down. That's naturally how it will occur. And the energy will then continue on the new path, which is now a downward slope. And that at another point, there's actually another degradation. And the energy then continues naturally without interference along that energy path until it continues to degrade and in fact winds up exactly where we were. Thus we see energetically that almost it's almost impossible to change stuff. How hard is it to change the simple things in our lives, right? It's really hard because of a number of reasons. One is we don't understand how that pattern works throughout us. But secondly, we don't know what to do even if we recognized it. Because the theory is that when that degradation of energy is hit, that at that moment is when you can, what's called, introduce an intentional shock. And then instead of faltering, it continues. And then other things are possible. So we're talking now about possibilities, all right? So we're talking about possibilities, and that's why I don't know if is that okay? Is that even marginally on, guys?
I think that's fine.
Fine with me.
Just for starters then, we'll just start with that, because I thought it was a good introduction maybe to this next paragraph. Lines of tension between the notes represent those transient forces continually shifting within the octave. Okay? Tensions are produced by force vibrating momentarily between two or more notes of that inner octave.
Get a picture of that? I got this picture.
Tell me.
I got this picture of these two stainless steel balls, right? They're next to one another. And maybe they're not stainless steel. Anyway, they're next to one another. And they're in harmony, perfect harmony.
Okay.
Together. But when one starts to fall away, then you get this tension going. You get this non-harmonious shift going
on. Between the two.
Yeah, between the two, just from them moving apart. The idea of moving apart.
Tensions are produced by force vibrating momentarily between two or more notes of the inner octave.
Forces continually shifting within the octave.
So what's being asked here is to distinguish between the octave and then the term inner octave. Any thoughts on that, guys? Is there a distinction that we can make now between those two terms? Or is it critical, or do we need to do that?
Is it the first time I'm introduced?
David, I think we have, in any enneagramic structure, you have one octave. You have one octave, and then when you have the inner movement of the law of seven within it, and when all of these, if those energies at those points of retardation are introduced appropriately, well, then it takes you up through that octave to the next higher octave, is my understanding. I'm not sure that clarified anything.
So it's the energies within the octave we're terming the inner octave at this particular moment?
Yes, that is between these this inner tension, seven of them, or actually it's a heptad within
right.
there that produces these tensions, because the two triangles, the two triads of this inner octave are fragmented. They're interrupted. They're not a triad. There are nine points in the circle,
correct,
which would be three triangles, three equilateral triangles, but two of them are interrupted because they're interacting with an inner octave. I'll have to defer to George to clarify that.
I think we're getting some ahas around here.
Yes, I concur.
Boy, I'll tell you, look, I think I'll, two things I'll just remind us of. First of all, an event appears to us to proceed more or less in a straight line from beginning to end, while at the same time, to outward appearances, an event seems to proceed in a straight line from beginning to end.
Right.
The forces, that there are inner forces that that look at, you know what, it's just occurring to me. I have a very good book that explains this. It's written by a friend of mine. It's called Accomplish the Impossible, in which these inner tensions are explained. I wish I had posted them on the site before tonight's session, but maybe I'll do that after the session. But
okay.
In any event, oh boy, I think I'll just be quiet for a moment.
Okay. So, just to continue to move forward a little bit, and I think we're going to need it in a couple of paragraphs, is that in an event, in fact, is not linear. It doesn't go from point A to point B and then that's all there is. There are intermodal transactions during that, during any of those events. It appears to go, but because, and maybe it's because of what Harry's talking about, that there are interrupted triangles. There is a tension between these elements that we move forward on. And where the tension is, that gives rise to something, okay? That gives rise to a possibility. I'm going to go ahead and read the next paragraph because for me it was actually a little clarifying for this paragraph. But we'll take a shot at that, okay? Yeah. So Dan is saying that he's distinguishing the inner octave and the outer octave, which is, he's saying that for him, the outer octave is observing the process, the external process, whereas the inner octave, he's saying, is watching your inner energetic unfoldment during that, maybe that same process. And that would be good to put in the log for people, too. Good point. So let's just go to the next paragraph real quick. The temporary moving tensions can be represented as 1-4, meaning the tension which exists momentarily between the first and the fourth notes, 4-2, which is to say the tensions temporarily produced in this sequence between the fourth and the second notes, 2-8, 8-5, 5-7, 7-1, then beginning again at 1-4. And Harry, that might answer one of the questions that you posed on the site. Is it the Aeneid or is it the Enneagram, right?
Correct.
And what the way I'm reading this, it sounds like it's the pattern set forth in the Enneagram.
That's my perspective on it. David, if I could add just one thing that might, just from simple experience, which is about all I can really grasp on this. In his book, Enneagram Studies, John Bennett really makes a beautiful, simple case for these inner tensions being understood in terms of preparing a meal at a school. You perhaps have seen this, where you don't just go smoothly around on the steps that are on the outside. you first have to start with something. You have to plan ahead. The cook has to plan ahead. And then he has to consider where that's going to lead as well, and then what else would be presupposed for that next step to take place. And that's what's hidden from us. That's the inner movement of these tensions. And I think, I wish I had that book handy, I would read it, but unfortunately, I can't put my hands on it right now. But I refer people to it. I think it would be very useful here.
I'd appreciate it, both of you, if you have time and would like to post some books that some of us could read on the site later, if for those of us who want to get a little deeper into this material. But we will find in these events like that, like for instance what's called an invocational dinner, and what occurs in that invocational dinner, and how the energy in a sense must flow in order for it to be correct, and how particular individuals have to lead it so that they know when to inject an intentional shock. So what's being described in this paragraph is specific tensions between specific notes. And if I'm correct, I would imagine there's a great deal behind each one of those when UJ goes on to say, 2-4-2, 2-8, 8-5, etc., whereas those are the positions on the enneagram, mm-hmm. and that there's tension between those points, I would imagine, is what he's referring to. These temporary tensions, which course continually through the octave and can represent any activity within the creation, borrow their force from the permanent tensions formed between the third, sixth, and ninth notes in the octave, meaning those tensions would permanently vibrate between the triad of fixed notes, forming the pyramid of permanent tensions within the octave. I don't have enough background to be able to explain that.
We'd almost have to make a model of that.
We'd not only have to make a model of it, we'd have to understand the specific tensions between 2-8, 8-5, 5-7, and how that those, in fact, are tensions that are sitting there. It's, I think, important for us to notate that there are these natural tensions in the activities that we're involved in, that things do not happen outside of these patterns. These are patterns that are occurring all the time. They're occurring, for instance, in a dinner where you sit down naturally with four or five friends, and suddenly the conversation goes quiet, but then you begin to introduce somebody introduces conversation, but not conversation as at the beginning of the chapter to create just dialogue, but to begin to instill in the beginnings of an invocation. And you begin to then draw people in into that so that the entire group is drawn in. So we're working with the tensions there, and by intentionally creating a shock like that. And I'm not talking here in a strict sense of how to do the shocks as indicated in these tension patterns, but rather I'm just talking instinctively how I've worked it and how we've seen it work as well. So maybe I'm going off a bit here. But I think then the next, we'll just continue for a while, and then at some point, it'll be time to stop. Because the ninth note, do, of the smaller octave is made in the exact image of the whole note, do, in the higher octave, and at the same time, this permanent ninth note of the fragmented sequence is also the temporary whole note, re, in the higher octave, of which the fragmented smaller octave is only a single note, the ninth note, do, forms a gateway through which it is possible to pass from octaves of lower order to octaves of a high order, and from octaves of a high order to octaves also of a lower order. So that's a gateway. That particular note is a gateway between octaves. There's no value put between higher and lower, just that it's a gateway. And so finding the gateway is part of the work that we're trying to do here, is understanding the gateway, not only for ourselves, but for working together with our fellow members here. Aria, are you on the phone? I don't know if she is or not.
I'm here.
Okay. Welcome. And welcome back.
Thanks.
You bet. Lost Horizon had made the comment that he thought it was time for you to comment. I had the same initial thought, but I went with...
Well, George and I both got lost immediately, so she's welcome to jump out there if she wants.
Well, I'm listening. I'm not trying to catch up because I've been gone for a couple of weeks, but is there something... I don't know what to comment on. Help
That's
me
okay.
out.
That's okay. Be instinctive in when it's time for you to share something, okay? I think that's
okay.
All that's telling us, that it's just that don't get too locked in your head. Maybe something will come out that you need to share, and it's okay for you to begin that process. Or if there's something on the log that someone is indicating. So,
I'm thinking about the triad of the notes and the tensions. One of the things that occurs to me is that when you have the triad, it's like you have a structure, you have a whole structure, a complete structure, and yet like our DNA, you have the entire complete entity, the complete structure is in every part of the structure. So you have the complete being, and then yet in every cell, every molecule of that being is a miniature of the complete structure. And it's like that's the triad. You have these notes that create tension, and it creates a pattern or a vibration. And yet in each part of that triad, it's the same. It contains the whole. And if
that's
you
change, very nice.
If you change any one part, if you don't have to change the whole thing. If you change one part of it, if you reflect on it, observe one part of it, that ripple effect automatically changes the rest. It creates something else. So that's kind of how I'm looking at things, but I'm not sure if that's
Aria, I think that's a wonderful analogy, because if you think about it, each individual has, you know, a contribution in their genetics of 23 chromosomes from the male and 23 from the female, held together by this mysterious invisible third force. So that would make that comparable.
We have to begin understanding this also energetically ourselves. I'm very anxious to, my time is limited during this part of the year, but I'm anxious to start looking at some of this material to see if these individuals, like you mentioned that Bennett, when he talked about some of these tensions and the octaves, he actually started to refer to it like in the preparation of the invocational dinner. I'm very interested in that because ultimately the spark I got from George 2 weeks ago when he started to talk about this in more detail was I thought it made sense to me. It made sense to me that I could know and sense this tensions of octaves and when it's time to inject an invocation, an intentional shock. Ultimately, that's what I'm interested in. The cosmology of it is attractive to me. That's just how my head works. But I'm also interested in like watching it unfold around me. And so in a curious way, I've been experimenting with it during the last week just to see, can I notice a moment when there's a retardation and can I inject a different intentional shock? It's hard to know if I'm doing that or am I just reacting from the machine and wanting to push it a certain way. And we're going to get into another part of that, and there's a chapter unfolds here. But so we have a number of questions that are here for us, but one that I really want to underline is this idea of a gateway, that the do from one octave is a gateway to another octave.
Can I tell you what came up for,
yeah,
for me when I read that? Is that the scale on the piano, starting with C, you know, every time you come to C, you have the possibility of going into another octave. You come to that note, and that's your gateway into the next octave.
Right.
And so you can see a physical manifestation on a piano or a keyboard.
And I think that that's used throughout, and I think in George's explanation for us on the website, you'll see that he's also used that,
mm-hmm,
wingsofchaos.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Dan is asking to help with the distinction between the idea that a musical octave has 8 notes. Pardon? Yeah, and what's the question again? I'm sorry.
Well, people are relating what we're reading to the musical side. And they're kind of, yeah.
Well, the ninth.
Yeah, we're not it's not the same relationship,
yeah,
but there is a gateway on the piano that you can kind of see how you would get from one octave to another octave. It's the same kind of idea, I would think. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I don't know if it's different or not. It
yeah.
seems pretty similar to me, the musical octave and the octaves that are being discussed here.
Well, we just have to go along and see, because, you know, see if that analogy holds for us.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not force anything. Let's just let it ride for a little while.
This ninth note, do, is part of the fixed notes forming the triad of fixed forces, as well as forming the first of the smaller, temporary notes in the sequence of fragmentation produced by tensions between the notes. Borrowing from both the fixed and the temporary tensions because it belongs to both worlds. So that's that particular transitory note that's in both worlds, that's how I'm reading that. That particular do. We With study of the octave, you will notice that the two other fixed notes exist completely independently from the smaller inner notes of the octave, except for the intermediary bridge formed by the ninth note, do. Even though I know we don't understand the cosmology, I just want to get a little bit of reality check here. George, is what this author is writing, is it consistent with your understanding of the study of octaves?
Yes, it is. The idea is that octaves are the same, only the frequency at which the octave, the frequency of vibration of the octave is different. So kind of like a piano, what we're trying to do is move from one octave to the next higher octave, which will be higher, a frequency of vibrations that open up to us other possibilities. And what this is attempting to tell us, but not very, not particularly well, is how to. Boy, David, I'm having a tough time putting this into words myself, you know. But anyway, what we're trying to do is get to the next higher do and resonate at a higher frequency in order to expand the possibilities of what we're experiencing.
If we don't do anything, by which I mean awaken the machine and inject intentional shocks, we will continue with the mechanicality that we're used to. When we think of the effort of getting to a class like this, there are four people here in this particular room, and I don't know, a few people online, but everybody made a particular effort to come here, and possibly in the arc of making that effort, there was like a fear point, you know, like when you were told that Ivan wasn't going to come here, and you were asked to come on, was there a little flutter?
Yeah.
I had a flutter when she said, I didn't know if she was going to say yes or no.
We hadn't really talked about it.
We hadn't talked about it, but then, so there was just this flutter, but I went on in any event. I said, I'm going to go anyway. And then when I heard, then I thought, okay, that's a good thing. Because there's more of us here to apply our attention to this. We're going to go, we've said so many times, this is a spiral of understanding. And we're being introduced to this. We're not glossing over it this time. We're spending a little bit of time on it. I know we don't get it. That's okay. But at least we're introducing these terms, terms like energetic steps, retardation, and the fact of this note being a gateway to another place. When you are in that other place, that is when the transformational effect of the essential self begins to take place. We're feeding the essential self rather than giving way to the mechanicality of the historical personality. That's real work. Okay? Mm-hmm. Your what? Yeah, and Dan's saying that he thought Arya would be talking at this point about the importance of, but in fact, he's talking about it. Dan's talking about the idea that prayer absolute and this work of prayer absolute, and prayer absolute is an example of how the octave works. That's a profound example of it. And it's an important example. And it's not so much about the mechanics of the octave, but Dan is saying it is what? Dan is saying it's rather a methodology of navigating spaces. Now, last year when we talked about, and many times we've talked about the idea of navigating spaces by means of mood, of a particular mood. And you'll see some of that if you read George's comments on the website.
David?
Yeah.
Dan and I were kind of talking about the octaves earlier and about introducing shots. And one of the things that had come to mind was that when we have these patterns and we see ourselves repeating a cycle or a same pattern over and over and over again, whether it's at work or in relationships or whatever it is, if we observe it and we see the pattern, there comes a time when we start to see the emergence of the pattern coming. We start to see, oh, here's where I trip up. Here I go falling into that pattern. When we start to see it at the beginning, we're kind of helpless to change it. But just observing it, it starts to change. Eventually, and I know for me personally, there comes a point where you see the pattern happening and you go, oh, here, this is the moment where I jump off and I go into the pattern. So
right.
It's like if I look at it as a spiral, I'm at the do, the first do,
right.
And I'm moving through my life and I'm going through this pattern and I start to see those things happening, that instead of it dying out the way you were talking about, I start to see like, oh, here I am again, I'm at the second do. Now I can either shift to the next spiral up, you know, where I'm at the second do on top of the first, or I go right back to the first do and repeat it again.
You
so I'm either
So the intentional shot there is what's called, it's your attention. You're injecting vibrant, awakened attention into the event, and it can't persist. Oddly enough, seems like a strange time, but I'm going to inject something from Spinoza once again. In chapter 2, in the fifth book of the Ethics, in proposition 2, in essence what he's saying is, if you find yourself in an infirmity, or to use Arya's term, in a pattern, there's nothing within that pattern that you can do to get out of it. He suggests that you can bring something, if you know it's going to happen, you bring something with you into that pattern, and then it can possibly change. This is 400 years ago.
I'd also like to say to her that that's the beauty of self-observation. You know, self-observation is
a curative concept that is inherent
in the basics of the teachings here. And self-observation, it has that effect of you observe it enough times, it will change. You don't have to change anything. All you have to do is observe it, and it
right.
will change itself for you.
The so-called the wind and water method.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to get things happening. Self-observation is a real key.
I think we tend to think of an outside shock as something that has to happen to us, when we can also create that intentional shock just by that observation.
I agree.
No question about it. No question about it.
Well said.
Let's venture a little bit more through some of these paragraphs. And I think it actually does fortify some of the things that Ari has been saying. If we intend to travel to the inner octave on a lower order or scale, the reason for which only can be explained much later in our work, we must intentionally introduce additional artificial shocks and the resulting force into the tensions existing ordinarily between mi and fa, the second and fourth notes. So I think we have to get out of our minds also, what is an intentional shock? What is an intentional shock? Isn't somebody that's experienced at doing this and suddenly can introduce an intentional shock. That's a dramatic way of looking at it. Another form of intentional shock is just what MA and Aria were talking about, which is the force of personal self-observation.
The force of attention.
And therefore the force of attention.
Yeah.
It's there's no question that that's the case.
David, that's exactly what Ouspensky says in Search of the Miraculous, is that self-observation is the first shock.
Okay, yeah. Now, I believe that there are some patterns in which we need our fellow workers to help us through. Okay? I think there are patterns that we are stuck in that whereby we need help from our fellow voyagers. And I think that that's the case with several of the individuals who have helped me and who have been on the phone with me and other individuals that just last night we were talking about a specific pattern that we can work together to inject an intentional shock because it's just not possible to really observe it. I mean, we know it's there, kind of know it's there, but we don't actually observe the mechanism of this singularity of model of how the energy works. So therefore, we can get help, but we need to sometimes seek that.
Well, if we could do it completely by ourselves through self-observation, we wouldn't need a school. So I think the fact that we have people around us who polish those diamonds for us, you know, help us to create those. Show us those places where the edges are.
Where the edges are, but also you naturally, it creates tension by being with people that aren't your type. You know, like I have a lot of harmony with MA, and then there are areas where we really rub each other the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. And that's a school phenomenon.
And because of that, there's work there to do. In life, you just avoid that area.
Thank God that we have that.
And that's how we can work together. But there has to be a desire for a particular type of surrender that works and allows that intentional force to come forward. I'm going to read a couple more paragraphs because
I think there also, David, has to be trust.
Okay. So there has to be trust. I think that's Susan. Is that right?
Yes, trust in the group, that the group is truly there for you.
There are 19 people apparently on the line right now. And that is a great deal of force. It's a great deal of force that is primarily rooted in the higher. And there was a really pleasant little comment that George put on his about this group that works and the work that we're doing together.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody would like to avail of themselves of that force of energy, it will come flowing in a proper curative manner to that individual. At any point that that is ready to occur, this class, in terms of speaking about a particular paragraph in a chapter, will stop and use that force to go to literally another level, where we can investigate something from that a particular individual lays before us. And that becomes a form of food that is remarkable. And I think Susan is telling us that it's based on we must trust.
And we must be brave enough to expose ourselves.
We must be brave enough to expose ourselves. And what that means is that when we have these mechanicalities, we think that, gosh, you know, I'm a player in this work. I've been around for all these years. I shouldn't have that kind of mechanicality. Shouldn't have that. I was approached by somebody a few months ago who was embarrassed.
Shouldn't.
Absolutely should not. Because I'm more advanced than that. And yet I was approached by somebody a few months ago who was utterly embarrassed to reveal the fact that they smoked cigarettes. But pride in smoking. And in revealing that, it was like a tremendous hurdle for this individual. Huge. You might not think about it. I mean, like everybody's on the line says, I know people that smoke. It's no big deal. You know? A lot of people do stuff like that. Well, doesn't matter. For that individual, it was a profound moment. Because they found a moment of whatever string they could grab onto, create a trust ladder to share.
And there must have been a lot of tension built up around there.
Enormous tension. And there's always the thing like, well, it's impossible to change. I can't change. And if I can't change, I'm probably not really ready for the work. In fact, I'm not. So I better not share it, because then I won't be part of the group. They'll kick me out of the sandbox.
It goes on a slippery slope. Quick. Way downhill.
But all of the stuff that we have, all these patterns that we're afraid to share, are in fact moments of circularity in this octave, where it just mechanically keeps cycling itself around.
Mm-hmm.
And our good friend Spinoza, when he realized that that's what he was in, he says, I found I was in a desperate situation. That's what he said when he saw that. Between me and Fa, you will notice, also a study is the fixed third note, which does not form part of the temporary fragmentation of the octave, which is to say, existing independently of the fragmented inner octave. Then, once again, to reach the ninth note of the inner octave, which is also the first note of the next octave, higher octave, and therefore slightly existing beyond the reach of the relatively weak force of the inner lower fragmented octave, another shock in the form of an additional note must be artificially introduced. So this terminology is using these forms of notes and additional note must be introduced, but an additional energetic must be introduced also at that time. This additional passing note must be added to the force of the inner octave when the sequence of tensions reaches the eighth note of the inner octave. Should it not be somehow introduced, the octave will continue. And it's ordinary inner circular sequence passing automatically to the smaller first note ray, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's this,
yes.
Here we go down, forming an ordinary tension between the first and fourth notes, continuing round and around the smaller circle until the necessary shocks and additional force are introduced to transcend the smaller octave into a larger one, if indeed this ever happens. And I put, in sleep, it generally does not ever happen. Possible, but it generally doesn't. However, it will not occur in the ordinary course of events. Fact is, it can only occur as a result of intentional shock, some outside force produced voluntarily and knowingly by someone who knows how to both produce and introduce the shock into the inner octave. And that someone is either our own self-observation, diligent self-observation, not selective self-observation, but it is generally selective, or to avail yourself of a group mind like we are forming here, or if you have available to yourself an into a teacher, so-called teacher, that's the form that it's taken many times as well. So we have a different form that we're working with here.
Mm-hmm.
This is the accurate picture of the life of man as he is. There is no source of wonder, since no additional shocks of force are provided by nature except at the final moment of death. That he is doomed to wander the lower circle of organic life, unable to escape from his circular motion, forced to forever repeat this meaningless activities. And this we understand. We understand that's mechanicality. But this chapter and the idea of pure absolute is introducing, and I strongly urge you to read what George has written and Harry's great questions. What it's introducing is the manner in which to observe and to begin to escape that. Like when to, that there are moments when a shock, such a shock is possible to introduce. And then it interrupts that circular mechanicality. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're looking for. It must be understood that movement within the octave is not linear from note to note, but through the influence of tensions.
Mm-hmm.
You implied that earlier. We can see that the tensions between me and Fa is momentarily transcended by artificially adding the force of a whole, even smaller octave, which forms a bridge, without which we would fall back to the beginning of the octave, forced to repeat the most rudimentary beginnings. So just one of the things that really hit me, George and Harry and everybody actually, was I was reading this, I realized how almost impossible it is for me to do in the classical sense of the Gurdjieffian terminology, you know, man can't do, you know, we have no will. And I realize that right now I'm in the midst of, you know, all this, I'm very busy season in my job, and I, most of the time I can't work. I can't just work and get the job done. And I realize that the reason I can't is because this circularity of mechanicality is happening. And I can almost taste the moments when that intentional shock is needed. And I can see that as I get to a certain level of tension, and then I want to offload the tension. So I'll go watch a movie or
mm-hmm.
have a cup of coffee or tea or take a walk.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly I'm three blocks away and I'm, why didn't I finish my task? And this is part of the reason why, is because I allowed the mechanicality of that moment rather than place myself under the onus of that extra effort, that effort of, I don't know, it puts me in a tension that's very difficult.
Extra effort might have done it. Might have bridged that gap between the place and the interval.
But it's almost like I don't want to be in the next level of energy.
Yeah.
I don't want to go there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I don't want to be under that tension.
Right.
And so I get
you at that moment that projecting what it's going to be like over there.
That's what I'm saying. Is that I avoid it, and by avoiding it, I avoid that tension created by the extra effort.
And wouldn't it be funny is if you actually were able to bridge that, that there was no tension over there because it actually bridged the tension part and you were able just to get on to work as if everything was even better than it was before.
I got a call from somebody on Sunday last, and the phone rings and I thought, oh my, I don't know if I want to take this because I knew where it was going to go. I knew that it would be a lot more of me would be engaged. And so there was that hesitation, is this, or that. But then I took it, and it was absolutely marvelous. Okay.
That willingness to take that effort to do that.
Was the shock.
Yeah. Might have been. I mean, because you put that extra effort in, and you could have just gone back to your lower octave self and
bumbling
just
along.
Hung out for a while and let the phone call pass by.
This is, technically, it's very heady stuff. And so what we're trying to do is draw some analogies into our own lives about it. And so I encourage all of us to share. And I don't know, Harry, Dan, if any... I want to hold this part open for questions or comments or self-reflections. Is there anything that needs to be shared? Harry, can you read Mark's story?
If I can find it here.
What time stamp is it?
Apparently not. Are you talking about it? Did he just post this on the log?
Mark Roche posted at 7:33, a half hour ago. I don't know if you have your time stamp on.
I do not, apparently. Hold on. I'm sorry, I can't find this.
Okay. So do you want to start sharing it a little bit, Dan?
After last week's session, I was at a bus stop. A woman and a man were talking, but were there separately. I felt a strong resonance with the woman and had the urge to speak with her. But remembering the chapter bit my metaphorical tongue. And avoided jumping in and possibly interrupting something useful. It took a bit of work to keep quiet. What was interesting, but by giving that space to what was happening, led to being completely in the flow of that conversation, which happened all by itself, because of waiting instead of jumping in. So much so that the woman commented on how magically it has happened. That was it? Yeah.
Good. So let's see if we can, maybe let's take.
There is one more posting on it.
Okay.
So much so that the woman commented on how magically it had happened. Seemed like a powerful demonstration of some of this octave stuff, which personally I only vaguely understand. Laugh out loud. I understand what he means there.
Yeah. Well, let's try this as an exercise for this week. And it's an exercise that I'd like everybody to take on. Whether you post it on the site is a different story. It would be helpful for all of us if you did. But can you observe something similar to what Mark's story was like? Can you observe a series of tensions that operate and maybe doing something, not injecting some intentionality into the energetic at that moment, rather than going with the normal flow of it? And see if that helps us understand this stuff. We're not going to understand it until we understand it personally and with our own eyes, so to speak. This is somebody else's dialogue, but Mark has made it his own because of what he has shared. So let's take an effort to do that.
Maybe that's different than our typical response that we would give a situation.
Something different response. And so when I send out the reminder email over the weekend, I'm going to say, don't forget to do this exercise. It will be happening tonight, all day tomorrow, every day the next day, all during the Easter weekend. This same pattern will be occurring. And armed with some of this information, maybe there can be a different note that you inject into the space.
Can you clarify one more time?
Yeah. Clarify the exercise?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Like Bennett was talking about the process of an invocational dinner, and Mark was talking about this process that he went through at the bus stop where there was a certain mechanicality that he was going to follow, but then his effort was to change the energetic by not doing something in that case, by not acting. And so the exercise is, and for you, it might be like doing something different by injecting some element or not doing something and finding the moments during the cycle of mechanicality where something different can be injected and therefore something different can happen. Does that make some sense?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I think everybody's experience is, as they live their life, is going to be unique in their own thing. So
it'll be
whatever happens to them.
Yeah, I mean, people have very dynamic lives. They're doing things. They have children. They have dogs. They have school that they have to teach. They have jobs they have to go to. They have television shows they have to watch. Everybody has different mountains to travel. Dan is saying, interestingly enough, the whole week is an octave. That's true. So, is that enough to keep us going for another week then on this?
For sure.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
And chapter 13, people, we will be on this for another 2 weeks minimum. I'll try to look at your material over the weekend and send any comments back. But if there are no more questions at this time, and we've completed everything that we've completed for this particular round.
I think Ivan will be back next week.
And Ivan will be back,
yeah.
And he might have been replaced by you.
we'll see how he does.
We'll see if he can earn his seat back. But in any event, thank you so much for coming this evening, and I look forward to seeing you next Wednesday. Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, MA and David.